to little Hall & Oates to honor their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I like that. Oh, man eater. Gerard Cherry is joining us now on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, and a Football Tuesday for you. Hello, Gerard.
What's going on, Notorious?
What's up, Gerard?
You good with those Rock Hall inductees?
Man, that's so funny you guys bring it up, because yesterday I bought the Essential Collection of Hall & Oates yesterday, where they have all the hits. That is like one of my all-time favorite groups. I'm so happy to hear that they're getting into the Hall of Fame.
Cool.
Really? I like that. Do they play that over at Tomo when you're in town? Do they walk you into some little Hall & Oates?
Gerard Cherry here for Tomo Sushi and Hibachi Restaurant and Lounge.
Oh, that's a different version.
Wait a second.
Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
Hey.
Wait a second.
That's more
myself.
Energy.
Well, I do, too. Yeah.
That didn't have that lounge feel to it.
No, it didn't.
Why'd you re-record that?
It was a holiday feel. You know what I'm saying? You're not really trying to get that type of vibe thinking about Christmas.
Uh-huh, for the holiday. Uh-huh.
Maybe in
a little more family friendly.
That, does it? No.
Okay. Very good.
I like that. So, Gerard, one of the things we were talking about in after further review was, if you were the Browns right now, would you trade a second-round pick to get Kirk Cousins as the quarterback of the future?
Wow, that is a very good question. But I would probably say no, because in my mind, I think you already have someone similar to Kirk Cousins already on your roster, Brian Hoyer, in my opinion. So I'd say no, because I think you could utilize that pick with shoring up some things, be it with the wide receiver position, something with the offensive line, or even the linebacker spot. So I think you have that in Brian Hoyer, and I wouldn't make that trade, no.
Okay. I mean, I just think about the asset and what he's proven. There's more proven, even though it's not a lot. Mm-hmm. It's very little, but there's more proven there than they're going to go down that risky road of drafting a quarterback somewhere. Maybe that would be a second rounder as well. But Nathan, I thought, had the perfect plan, which is deal one of your picks from the first to accumulate the extra second to make some kind of a trade like that for a quarterback. I would think from a coaching staff standpoint as well, there might be a little more comfort, maybe a lot more comfort in having another guy like that in the fold along with Brian Hoyer. And now you're looking at those two guys, and maybe in addition to whatever rookie you might pick up in the third round or whatever in your mix. Now you've got a nice mix of a little bit older with Hoyer, a little bit, a younger second-year guy, or he'll be a third-year guy in Cousins if he's even available, and we're just talking hypothetically, mm-hmm. And then your rookie.
Yeah, and that is possible, and I like what Kirk Cousins has done in his opportunities to get meaningful playing time. Even last week, he had Washington position to win. Oh. Ultimately, they lost the game. I guess I'm looking for, if we're going to use him just as a stop
looking over, for somebody to wow you,
fill gap, then yeah. I think you can get by with Hoyer.
So you're not – oh, yeah. See, I wasn't thinking stopgap, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm thinking he could be the guy.
Okay.
The guy. Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think he's exceptional. As I said, I think Washington did a good job of making that move to get an asset. You know, they're obviously committed to RG3 and going forward, and this was the perfect showcase. And Mike Shanahan leaves that team with a quarterback controversy.
Take that, right?
Of course he does.
It's like, take that is right. Hey, Gerard, the other thing we talked about was the receiving position and the issue about whether or not Greg Little and Devon Bess would be on this team next year. Nathan broke down Bess's numbers, the targets through his whole career, and then the targets this season, and you know, not seeing that production, and we've certainly seen more drops than we expected. Again, I had modest expectations. I thought he'd be a nice guy to have, the experience, round out the receiving core, but what I guess what I was expecting was more reliability, even if in a limited sense as a slot guy. But he didn't even give you that so far.
No, he did not give you that, and I had high expectations. I figured he'd leave where he left off in Miami, far as being a sure-handed receiver who made plays, made things happen, and maybe he's not adjusting to the weather or whoever's throwing the football to him, but it has been, in my mind, a disappointment that he has not lived up to, I'm sure, a high standard that he holds himself to. So I could not imagine him being on this roster next year unless there's a pay cut involved. And even if so, probably fighting for a spot on the roster, not a guaranteed as your third wide receiver or anything of that nature or magnitude, because the production has just been non-existent. Can't have just one game in which we remember your name and calling your number, but have so many pivotal plays in which you drop balls, and that's what we remember you for. So he, I see as a slim chance to none of these here. And then did you say Greg Little as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you think about Greg Little. He's the dangerous one because in my mind, he might be the guy that if you let go, he'll probably go somewhere and get into a place where there is a presence of a veteran leadership on the offensive side of the ball in the locker room and causes him to step up, or maybe Alonzo Mourning talks to him more often than not, and then he steps his game up to a level in which you're saying to yourself, yeah, man, utilize those strengths that you've been blessed physically to have. So with him, I'm sketchy, but at the same time, considering that he doesn't show up either, considering how many times he plays, I would not be surprised if he's not on the roster, but if he is, there should definitely be a situation in which he is competing to be the second or third wide receiver on this roster.
One guy who has been much maligned this season, and for good reason, over the first eight games of the year, he gave up 9 sacks. He was giving up quarterback hits and quarterback hurries out the wazoo, was Mitchell Schwartz.
Right.
I think he's starting to play a little bit better. Only 2 sacks allowed in his last 5 games. I thought last week was maybe his best game of the season against the Chicago Bears. Do you think that they can go with Mitchell Schwartz at right tackle, or is that still a position that you think must be addressed?
I think you still need to have the depth in mind. At the same time, I also think part of Mitchell's issue early on was, okay, I have Anil Cousins next to me, a guy who I'm used to probably trying to compete with, to hold at bay, not to take my spot. Now we have to work together as teammates in the offensive guard tackle situation, and he obviously did not feel comfortable with it, and he struggled early on, maybe trying to overcompensate so much. But if a guy's playing well at the end of the year, Nathan, and he's starting to shore things up, that's a sign of encouragement for me that, hey, maybe we do have something here. Now, if he does these last 2 games, what we saw early on, you're going to have to address it. But I think in the back of the minds, if I was the person involved in making decisions, I'm going to at least have someone there just in case things do fall apart early on next year so I can make a change. Just to let guys know that you're not safe just because you've been designated a starter at the beginning of the season.
Have you noticed an improvement in his play? Do you feel that he's been playing better of late?
I'm not calling his name as much.
I agree. I think he has improved for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think the issue really with the line is now much more on the interior side. It's much more been the guard play that's been the bigger problem, right?
Right. Yeah. It has been. And that's one of the reasons why the run game has not been what we wanted to be as well. And you look at it, if you don't have that push in the interior, you can't sustain a run game. So I see why coaches get away from it if you don't have faith in your blocking.
I guess what I want to see, though, too, and even though philosophically I know what North Turner is all about, I know what he's rooted in, it made sense to be more aggressive with the run, if that's the word we can use. Just they gave the running game a little more chance, a little more of a chance against Chicago because Chicago has the worst run defense in the league.
Right.
The Jets have the second best run defense in the league. The Jets would be a team that you don't probably run as well against consistently, although I think some of that number reflects on how poorly they've defended the pass. They're like 24th or something like that in the league. So the teams throw on them because they can and will, and they're getting turnovers from their offense and trying to cash in on those. But I think it makes sense to go into this game and really start to see what we have in Edwin Baker. Put him out there. Let him run. Let him just make this the training camp practice slash scrimmage slash preseason game for this guy. You know, get as much knowledge as you can. And those other guys, those guys in front of him, those offensive linemen, those guards, max it out so that you can get a true evaluation of what your run game is.
Right. I have no problem with that because I was very pleasantly surprised what Baker brought to the table last week. He ran with conviction. He had an angst and attitude about how he was running the football. We hadn't seen that. And I give Obanaya credit and Fozzie to some degree. Yes, they have had some good plays. But the way Baker was running, that looked like a guy possessed with something to prove. So let's put him out there. Because if he can do the same thing he did against the worst run defense in the NFL, against one of the better ones, that gives you signs that, hey, there's another guy we could consider bringing back and also reward him for the fact that he is playing hard at the end of the year. Because so much of this is, and we got to remember, is letting guys know that you have to earn the right to be not only on this football team, but in the National Football League. And I think that as we go out the rest of this season, one of the things I'll walk away from is saying is that a lot of guys on this roster were too safe and felt that they had the right to be there as opposed to understanding it was a privilege.
Gerard, this past week we got our most extended look at Leon McFadden that we have all season. What was your assessment of his play?
Not too bad, not too good, and he's put in vicarious situations with the pass interference calls, and you don't want to be labeled as that guy because the referee's going to keep calling it on you. I mean, like I said, he's in the screen, so that's a start, and he's looking like a young player, not looking polished by any stretch of the imagination, but he's just going to have to continue working until he gets comfortable. And when I watch him, I don't see a guy scared to be out there, so that's a great start because I've seen situations like that when guys are on the island, like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? But he doesn't have that body language, so that's a good thing. So I think there's hope for Leon. Like I said, he's just got to have to switch his game up and not be primarily an off-man guy, but also work on his bump game and just have a full arsenal of what he can do as a DB. So it's there. There's some things there to be happy about. Is it jaw-dropping at this point? No, it's not.
I love it when the third member of our band shows up, and that's Gerard Great. Cherry. Every day. Love it. Gerard, thank you, man.
Well, thank you, guys. The Notorious.
And catch Gerard shortly with Bruce Hooley. Hooley and Gerard, that comes up
and
after
Nate
this
Dog.
Show.
Right.
And we've got to tell you that it's been fun. It's been a fun Tuesday, or as fun as a Tuesday can be on a team that's won four games, but we made it interesting. That's what we do.
That's what we do. And then, you know, as the week goes on, we'll take a look ahead to this game against the Jets,
yes.
Another team that has had a season gone awry, and we'll assess that matchup and see what the Browns can do in New York City.
Let's thank Rob Chudzinski, the head coach of the Browns, for joining us. Don Cockcroft for being here. Want to thank Jameer Howerton sitting down with Marquise Gray, the two of them. And also want to thank Carly McCourt for the tweeting she did throughout the show. She's putting together Browns Daily Wrap that will be posted on ClevelandBrowns.com a little later today, y'all. And what else? The callers. Oh, yeah, Dave DiNatale, our outstanding producer. And after further review, he did such an excellent job of that. For Nate Dogg, Nathan Zagura, I'm Vic Notorious VIC.
Notorious Carissa. VIC, that's
Can't,
right.
I love it. I just, you know, my kids are giving me so much crap about this now, too. They love it. But anyway, we're going to talk about this stuff tomorrow and get into this Jets game. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by
Liberty Ford. Here we go, Brownies. Here we go.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.